All right, thanks, Ms. Beckman. All right, so let's call the meeting to order. It is 9:31. Ms. Pakenham, would you do roll call for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davey? Welcome back to him. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Ms. Denton? And Dr. Rates? And Dr. Davey, roll call. Thank you. Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
All right, great, thank you. Board staff, I appreciate you all doing the work that you're doing and protecting the public and digging into some of the files that we need to and pressing people for the protection of the Arizonians. I appreciate that and the work you're doing. And of course, my fellow committee members for the efforts that they're doing and going through the documents and ensuring that things are in proper order. So thank you for that. And Ms. Packin, I'm going to hand over the next agenda item to you or the next bullet for that item.
Yes, it's my pleasure, Mr. Chair, to address this particular item. So we'd like to acknowledge that both you and Dr. Davey have accomplished something that no one in the history of the world has ever done, which is completed an entire 5-year term on the Committee on Behavior Analysts for the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners. And I don't know that any member of the public can truly appreciate the devotion, the dedication, the focus, and you know, just the time that's required to serve in this capacity. If I had to guess, when you were first tapped to serve in this role, you probably didn't understand the depth and breadth of what you were committing to. And over time, this committee's work has been increasingly challenging and complex. And from my perspective, you're rising to the occasion every step of the way. So board staff, when we have this level of support from the committee, you make our work so much easier to accomplish. And we appreciate your leadership so much. And I'd like to display, if you'll indulge me, what we are presenting to you. You'll soon receive your awards, but I thought maybe the public would appreciate sort of seeing what it is that we were, that you'll soon be proudly displaying on your or on your mantles. Hold on just a moment. Oh, sorry. Committee members, this photo is in your meeting folder if you'd like to look at it, but for the benefit of the public, we will be presenting you with these plaques. So thank you for your service. And if any other committee members have any thoughts to share, I think now is the right time to do that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I chuckled when she talked about the tap on the shoulder, because I'm pretty sure we wrangled you in a very similar fashion like that. So I apologize, but I hope that you have enjoyed this and I appreciate you joining us on this venture. It has been a huge pleasure to serve in this capacity with you, and we appreciate all of the work that you have done as a chair. For Dr. Davey, I have
some questions, but I think she might be able to answer them better.
I think this is a journey we've been on for longer than what the statute allowed for as well. So I know in Arizona, you have been instrumental since, you know, the late, 2008, 2009, maybe even sooner in getting licensure and regulation of practice for behavior analysis out on the table. So thank you so much for all of your hard work on that as well. And I couldn't choose a better partner to run all of this with.
Mr. Chairman, if I can go next. What I would say is I think that I have really an interesting story about the two of you. When I very first moved to Arizona, you were the very first behavior analyst I knew. And that was in 2011. So I think just over the years, the example that has been set, the ethics that have been set forth is really commendable. And I have learned quite a bit as I've come onto this committee, just about how to further that, how to protect the public. And I would agree that the two of you serving this role have benefited the public immensely.
I would just echo all that's been said. I think I have a similar story when I first arrived here. Dr. Davey, I think you might have been the very first person I met at a small meeting, and you were incredibly thoughtful and kind and welcoming. And I would say the same for you, Dr. Stenhoff. I think the public and the practice is in such great hands, and I'll appreciate your leadership over the years.
As all of you've expressed, we all have kind of a long history with one another, and it's been a great journey in various capacities, and it's for me it's been an incredible honor to actually be asked to do this and do it over the months, and board staff likewise. It's a great to work with all of you, and the professionalism that you display, and the dedication to the work that you're doing. So I appreciate the comments, but it's the comments go right back to all of you as well. It's been a great time. So
yeah, Mr. Chair, I just echo that this doesn't happen with just one or two people. It requires everyone from the board staff that just keeps us organized and keeps us heading in the right direction and deals with our ridiculous questions and trying to understand rules and statutes. And not only with Heidi and Jennifer and now Ms. Malice and Kathy, but Ms. Galvin, probably if it wasn't for Ms. Galvin, I don't know that I would be as involved as I am today. Between her and the late Dr. Bohansky, Dr. Wessler, and a few others, Dan Davidson, they really were the individuals that helped get this committee where it is today. And it is an honor to serve on it. It's an honor for me to be able to say great things about Arizona's licensure abilities when it comes to behavior analysts, the fact that we have representation on the psychology board with Dr. Davis Wilson and myself just speaks volumes to where we've come from when the licensure law was passed as one of the first three in the country in 2010. And so it is an honor. And I actually thank all of you for all your dedication and help, and the fact that we've been able to license hundreds of behavior analysts, which leads to hundreds and hundreds of hours of services in the state, is just an amazing feat. So thank you. It makes me feel old to get an award that says stuff that's 5 years of service somewhere. I mean, the only thing I've done longer is my marriage, so that's that's that goes hand in hand, I guess.
Yeah, very true. All right, well, thank you everybody. I suppose we should move on to the next agenda item. And so we'll review the applications. Dr. Davey, your lead on Lindsay Patterson. I believe there's some individuals. Well, Ms. Pakanon, are there individuals attending in relation to this time?
I think we need to address the number four approval of minutes.
Thank you. All right, so let's step back one. Approval of minutes. I think we can group approve these, if I recall. Do we have a motion to approve the regular session minutes and the executive session minutes for February 4th, 2022?
Mr. Chair, I am recused.
You are, okay. But you're recused from being, okay, from the whole...
Yes, I was not present for the meeting, so I was not a part of either of the meetings.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I was present, and so moved.
All right. And do I have a second?
I will second.
All right. Discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Motion carries. Now, agenda item number 5. We'll consider possible action regarding the recommendation of the board for approval of behavior analyst applications. And now, Dr. Davey, you're up. Lindsay Patterson. And then, Ms. Packen, going back to my initial question, do we have?
I believe, so we did invite Ms. Patterson. I don't see that she's present. Ms. Malice can do a check on that for us. We do have a participant who's identified only by Brooke, and that may be Ms. Mannion. So at this time, we can invite her to introduce herself if that's indeed who I believe it to be.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here with my lawyer, Whitney Dupree, and I actually would like to read the letter that I wrote and gave to the committee on record, please.
Well, I think first we're going through the application process, so if we can just do a brief summary, and then when we get to that point, I think that'll be fine. The application is really to be able to license Lindsay Patterson. What came through in our discussion and review of records was that we were missing some documentation from one of the supervisors. The individual seeking licensure had made several attempts to secure the documentation that the committee requires per our rules and statutes. The applicant was unsuccessful to be able to do so, and alerted the board staff. Board staff then attempted several times to work with the supervisor in question, in this case, Ms. Mannion, to be able to obtain the records that were required to be able to fulfill our duties here in the state of Arizona. And during that, those attempts, board staff also failed to be able to get the information required, even when providing multiple means, with less and less response effort, in an effort to be able to bring Ms. Patterson into the fold as a licensed behavior analyst, begin her career in the state of Arizona. And without the supervisor's cooperation, this committee issued a subpoena for her to compel her attendance at today's meeting. And so with that, that's where we stand. We need verification that we've asked for and that we require to be able to license Mrs. Patterson. Hopefully we can get to the end of that today with you, Ms. Mannion. And that's where we stand, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. So Dr. Davey, on the current documentation, do we have documentation to move forward at this point? Do you believe it's satisfied?
I'll actually let board staff refer to that if we feel as if we've hit the qualification there in terms of the documentation.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I think the question is really going to come to an interpretation of board rule as it relates to when an applicant is unable to secure qualifying or acceptable documentation from a supervisor, does that other provision of the rule afford us the opportunity to instead consider the materials that largely came from the applicant? And I can bring up that rule in just a moment.
I think that maybe at this point might be interesting to hear the supervisor's point here and whether or not we're going to get the records that we require so that we don't have to rely on that rule.
Right. Ms. Mannion, if you or your counsel would like to speak to that, you may do so at this time.
Hi, good morning. My name is Whitney Dupree. I'm counsel for Ms. Mannion. I just wanted to address a couple of quick things. I understand that there was a subpoena. I did want to note, I spoke with the attorney who issued the subpoena. The subpoena is not enforceable as it was. That being said, Ms. Mannion is trying to cooperate, which is why she submitted the documentation that she did have and which is why she is here today and wrote the letter to the committee, which she would like to read. And then any other direct questions Ms. Mannion can answer.
Ms. Mannion, would you like to read your letter at this time?
Sure. To whom it may concern, my name is Brooke Mannion, and I am a board-certified behavior analyst living and practicing in Central Florida. I was one of Lindsay Patterson's supervising BCBAs when she worked for my company, and she was under supervision and employed as a behavior technician from 2014 until 2016. I'd like to respond to concerns brought up by the State of Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners, and specifically to Dr. Davey, who seems to have a very weighted opinion about my professionalism and time management skills. His words were impressively slanderous, considering we have never spoken, met, or worked together in any capacity. First point, any records from 2014 when Mrs. Patterson started her supervision are gone. We keep records for 7 years as mandated by the BACB and law. During the years Mrs. Patterson was under supervision with my company, supervisees were required to maintain their own paper field supervision forms. Supervisors reviewed for the accuracy of these forms and signed off on them. There were no online or software-based hour trackers at that time. At the time of her departure from my company, Lindsay Patterson should have had copies of her monthly field supervision forms in case of an audit. The BACB would audit her if they wanted the documentation. We gave her these so she would have the original signatures. The BACB does not audit supervisors, therefore we felt it was better to give her everything upon leaving. This was a very, very long time ago. I cannot remember much about her supervision experience. I am positive and I have faith that if the BACB deemed her application worthy of sitting for the exam, combined with her past status on the exam and her current active BCBA certification status, that she met all of her supervision requirements per our field certification board. Mrs. Patterson contacted me via Facebook Messenger on August 5th, 2021 for the first time in 5 years to ask for documentation. She sent me a Google link that I was to use to upload the documents. I made it clear that the only documentation I had left was her final supervision form completed in 2016, and that she was supposed to keep all of her own documentation in the event of an audit by the BACB. I further expressed my concern that the Google link was not secure, was asking for my personal Google login information, and that I was not comfortable using the link in the event it was a security breach. Because we had not spoken in so long, I wasn't sure if her account had been hacked. I asked Mrs. Patterson to please make her request through a proper work channel via company phone or company email. To date, and to my knowledge, this was never done. Upon multiple requests from Mrs. Patterson through Facebook and against my better judgment, I finally sent her a PDF copy of her final supervision form from 2016. She wrote back on Facebook Messenger that this was not sufficient and that the Arizona board wanted a copy from me. I again voiced concern about the legitimacy of the whole situation being conducted over Facebook. Mrs. Patterson's response was to provide me with an email address on September 13th for a person named Zakiya Malis. On September 21st, I emailed Zakiya asking about the legitimacy of the request, as it sounded incredibly strange to me. All of the other states I have interacted with or are licensed in myself, grandfathered BCBAs in based on BACB certification status. So I went through all of that about the Google link, and I received absolutely no response from Zakiya Malis. On January 24th, 4 months after my initial email was sent, I received a reply from Heidi outlining the time limits on the application and another request for the document I gave to Lindsay Patterson. I responded that their timelines were not my emergency and that Lindsay had everything they needed. I waited for a reply for 4 months and never received one. Heidi and Zakiya did not seem overly concerned about the situation, so I would not be either. On January 27th, I received a request to attend a Zoom meeting scheduled for February 4th to review Ms. Patterson's application for licensure in Arizona. I promptly responded the same day that I had commitments scheduled for that day, and with only 1 week notice, I could not cancel them. And then today, I was subpoenaed following the, this was not today. I was subpoenaed following the February 4th meeting. The subpoena was sent to the wrong address. I didn't receive it until February 28th because it was sent to the wrong address. I did receive the audio in which I was called appalling and unprofessional, as Dr. Davey put it, and I received an emailed copy of the subpoena. I would actually also like to take some time to address Dr. Davey's concerns about my time management and offer some rebuttal on some of his comments found on the audio of a public meeting. If the Arizona Board of Psychological Examiners and Dr. Davey really need to know why I was so busy and that I could not take, quote, a little time out to search for records from nearly a decade ago. It was actually because I was out of state from August until December of 2021 working, in which I did tell Lindsay Patterson this. I was at home 3 days a week. I have children, and I run a business that provides ABA services to over 50 families across three locations and comprises a staff of 30 RBTs, BCABAs, and BCBAs. Anytime I was home, priority had to be given to these two things. Clients and family will always take priority. Dr. Davey should respect this, as I heard him take a call from his daughter during the February 4th meeting. He should know what it's like to be a working parent. Two, I did attempt to find the documentation. I sent staff to the storage locker while I was out of state to look for it. They found the final supervision form, which they sent to Lindsay Patterson. When I returned to Florida in December, I found that my operations manager and my business partner had both contracted COVID-19 and were critically ill. That left me the only administrator running the entire company for 2 months, including all daily operations, HR, payroll, filling in for sick employees, hiring, firing for three locations that are an hour to an hour and a half apart. My operations manager nearly died from blood clots that formed in her heart, lungs, and legs. It took every free minute I had to keep the company going when we were so critically short-staffed due to the pandemic. Again, our clients and their service needs take priority over verifying the supervision hours of someone who's been a BCBA for roughly 5 years. Final point, my adopted daughter suffers from PTSD as a result of her childhood trauma. I have specific requirements I'm required to meet for the state because she's adopted from foster care. I am currently, right now, as I sit on this meeting, missing a psychological review for her, for something that was resolved in February because the ACB documentation was discussed and is acceptable alternative for Mrs. Patterson's application review. Yet I've been commanded to attend this Zoom meeting. So it is my hope that Dr. Davey takes a strong look inside of himself, again, a quote, and asks which is more of a priority, this meeting or my daughter's mental welfare. So this being said, due to Dr. Davey's assumptions regarding my professionalism and the comments he made during a public meeting in an attempt to publicly shame me, damage my credibility, and possibly ruin my livelihood by threatening to pursue additional disciplinary action against me, I no longer feel comfortable speaking to this board unless legal counsel is representing me. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Mannion. Any questions for Ms. Mannion at this point? Oh, Dr. Davey, you're muted.
Thank you. I think I'll start off with some questions, and I guess they'll be addressed to counsel. So first question, I guess, would be kind of the timeline I'd like to explore in terms of our request. The initial request came, I think you noted that it came in 2021, August 5th, correct? Or counsel, that's correct. For information related to supervision.
I apologize. I was on mute myself. That's correct. There was the August request from Ms. Patterson via Facebook message.
So I think that the frustration comes from August to September to October to November to where we're at today, right? So the request for information related to this individual's supervision has come through not only the applicant in this case, of who the BCBA, Ms. Mannion, does have obligations to in terms of that documentation. And then the request came from this board, which has very large obligation to seek that information. So the frustration grows month over month over month. And the email communications with board staff that I do stand by are inappropriate and citing things that really are not relevant to our requests. And in addition to things such as other BCBAs are grandfathered in or other BCBAs that are seeking licensure, it's just good enough to be able to be told they're BCBAs. Those are not rules or regulations that our staff make or that the BCBAs that sit on this committee make. Those are promulgated and set forth by our legislature. than enacted. We follow those rules. And so when we are seeking this information, it's not to put individuals out. It's not to take away from their family time. We try to provide enough lead time for this information to be gathered and sent to us. In this case, we provided multiple ways for you, Ms. Mannion, to attest that this information was correct, that would not have taken away from your family time. And I do value time. So I think that the timeline to me is the important piece here. This is not something that's happened or transpired over the course of a month or even 2 months. We have multiple months here that are going on. But the second one is the timeline of which, I guess, to counsel, 7 years to retain records. You know, we're at the 7-year mark of when we would want these records. These records, I think in one of the communications, were in storage. And now they're destroyed, as the letter says. So is that an accurate statement that they've been destroyed since this process started, or they were destroyed prior to this process?
No, Dr. Davey, no, that is not an accurate statement. That's not what the letter states. And to address a couple of things, I understand the initial request came in August from Ms. Patterson via Facebook message to Ms. Mannion. However, in September, Ms. Mannion did contact the board, and she didn't get a response until January. So I understand the frustration on behalf of the committee trying to get this application through. However, I think there's been some breakdown in communication and there's frustration on both parts. And as far as the records, no, they were not destroyed. As the letter stated, Ms. Mannion had one final form, which, excuse me, was submitted to the board. It was given to Ms. Patterson individually, also submitted to the board. And any of the other records, the hard copies, were given directly to Ms. Patterson. And that was done because typically if the BCBA does audit, they go directly to the licensed individual. And so Ms. Mannion and Learning Leaps Behavior Services gave those directly to Ms. Patterson. They did go look in the storage unit to see if they had any additional copies, which they do not have. Nothing's been destroyed. It was just the originals were given to them, and they have double checked that there are no other records other than that final form, which was submitted to the board.
So then with regards to, as we attempted to find ways to work with your clients to provide a simple attest to the fact that this document is original, attest to this information being correct, any particular reason why those responses that required significant less effort as we work through this process were not attended to?
I'd love to see that. I have to be honest, I did not see that. I actually called the board a week or so ago after receiving the subpoena and stated, hey, if there are no records, is it possible for her to get a copy of the records which Ms. Patterson had submitted and then her sign a notarized letter stating, yes, these are, in fact, true copies of what was given to her and appear to be a correct version of it. And I was told, yeah, that might work. And, you know, please check for any of the records that you have. And so at that point, we submitted the final and then the letter and agreed to appear today.
So if my memory serves me correctly in reviewing the documentation, board staff had made multiple attempts to essentially provide ways to be attested via email, via different methods that could have been acted upon prior to the subpoena being issued. The subpoena being issued was triggered by the fact that we could not get a response and that we had an applicant that that was seeking licensure. And we have our own timelines, own rules, as we've discussed. So I guess I'm still just struggling with why we got to this point. Ms. Manny can be upset with me that I, you know, was upset with her, the fact that we got to this point, that's valid. I think that goes both ways. We tried to work through this with her to be able to get her to provide us, if not the direct material, at least I don't think we requested even a signed affidavit. We requested literally a response to an email. And to me, you know, we were trying to work with Ms. Mannion so that we could get this licensee application through, and we just continue to kind of hit roadblocks. Again, I appreciate the fact that all of us have lots going on, and I'm deeply sorry to hear about the staff members that were affected by the medical crisis, I think that that's all, I understand those things come. I think, but it's incumbent upon us as professionals to be able to deal with emails, particularly ones that have other individuals' lives tied up in them, their ability to work, their ability to create an income for their families, and to act upon those and get those going forward. That is our obligation as professionals and as BCBAs. The other part I would point out is some of the language back and forth to the board with regard to why do I have to do this? You know, BACB guidelines are pretty clear that jurisdictions that request information from BCBAs certified under the BACB need to respond to these documents. And I understand our subpoena is not enforceable, but it's one way we can get someone's attention. And in this case, we did. But we've used it once, I think, from this committee to be able to compel someone to talk to us. And I think it's disingenuous to miss the attempts that staff made to gather the information outside of the attempts that were made by the applicant.
Can I say something, please?
With that, I think...
Brooke Mannion. The board has never contacted me. They never contacted me until January 24th. So what other attempts to contact me did I not meet with? Because the only time I've ever been contacted by the board was when they finally responded to my email from September on January 24th, I think it was.
Ms. Pagnon, do we have the history? I can go through it and see if I can pull it through on the PDF.
Yes, let me give you the, it's in your folder and it's saved as a separate document. It's 5A1, is it D? And while I'm confirming how it is filed in your folder, I think that it might be important for there to be some acknowledgement that it is not the role of board staff to try to achieve for anyone a complete application file. It is, in fact, arguably inappropriate for board staff to intervene in an application-related manner. However, I made an exception in this instance for the benefit of the applicant who was not achieving what she needed in terms of a complete application file. I had hoped that my response would be illustrative and helpful and compel what we were all wanting, which was the missing documentation. In doing so, I'm going to acknowledge I may have crossed a line because that is not board staff's role. But I think this committee would forgive me in doing so because, again, the motivation was let's try to get this file complete so this person can receive the substantive review of her application.
And Dr. Davy, if I may just say, look, I understand frustrations on all parts. Heidi, I understand trying to be helpful. And I think that ultimately, it may not be a very productive use of time going back and forth on this email, that email. I think that we, you know, can agree to disagree on that, but we're here now. What can we do to move this application through the process? We have supplied all of the documentation that we have. Is there another resolution as to what you need us to do or answer other questions? Like Ms. Mannion said, she doesn't have firsthand knowledge of the memory of 6 years ago, but she's confident that Ms. Patterson was eligible, received the license, and did everything that was required by her other license in Florida, therefore would most likely meet the same in Arizona. But I think that ultimately it may be a more productive use of everyone's time to be able to move forward and see what can we do now to get this application through.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davy, the timeline that you're looking for is at 5A1C. It's titled Memo Lindsay Patterson Supervised Experience Documentation Request. And then if the committee needs to refer to the rule R426403, you may remember from last meeting, we found the language at subsection C1. small b. This is the language that identifies what, if the applicant demonstrates to the board that a supervisor cannot be located, or at the request of the board, the applicant may submit a copy of each BACB final experience verification form the applicant submitted to the BACB when the applicant applied to the BACB for certification.
Yes, I think, go ahead.
I apologize, I was gonna say, I think that was written in such a way that we could allow for the applicant understanding the process for first party verification, and that we try under all attempts to do so to get the first party verification. I think that we also recognize, though, that, I mean, we were running into circumstances in which supervisors were not able to be reached, or, you know, different circumstances in which, you know, the BACB does save these documents. And so while I know it was our best practice to get the first party verification, I think in the early conversations of adding in this rule, we were looking for a pathway that would allow for additional submission of information should there be any delays or hiccups.
So, Mr. Chair, I think what we have here is we have the document to, Ms. Mannion, I assume you have the supervision form that was put forward by the applicant that essentially lists that you were her supervisor from 6-9 2014 through 7-22-2016. She lists, and if you don't, I'm more than happy to kind of summarize it for you. Talks about it being an in-home setting event, or setting events were in there. You essentially signed this, correct, Ms. Packanine, and sent it back to the applicant versus sending it back to the board. Mm-hmm. That is where, you know, this was done. You had done it, but we just not followed the one step that we needed to be able to say this was not doctored. This was an original form that came. It's not, you know, and right at the bottom, it talks about the importance of this form, and it coming from, in the instructions, it coming directly from you back to the board. Okay, so today, I mean, in terms of what the rule says, if we can verbally get you to attest that this form is in fact not altered, that these are correct statements, I think I'd be willing to make the motion to move this forward. But we need to hear that from you, whether it's via email or via your verbal statement today.
Yes, as stated in my August email, that was never responded to. I do know that I supervised her and I filled out the final supervision form.
And you also signed a BACB verification form for us, correct?
At the time that I supervised her, I don't know about anything from specifically from Arizona. I do know that the final verification form from the BACB was filled out in 2016, and I gave her the original because she needed it for her application to sit for the exam. The only thing I have is a PDF copy.
That's the document I'm referring to. Thank you. And that's the one that was sent back to her versus being sent to the board staff, correct?
Yes, because again, she was communicating with me over Facebook Messenger, and I asked for verification. Is this an accurate? Is this real? And no one wrote me back.
And it was resent to the board earlier this week by myself, confirming that that is a correct copy that Ms. Mannion had within her possession.
Ms. Packanine, is that correct? We have confirmation of that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would like to just respond to a couple of points as just a point of clarification. As far as the retention of records, that is a supervisor's responsibility. And so I do want to just make note of that, just so that Ms. Mannion, so that moving forward, you might want to consider changing your practice. because in 2014, when the BACB revised their supervisor requirements, they did put in the requirements, which was a part of the 8-hour training, that the 7-year retention of records was to be done by the organization and or supervisor, as well as the supervisee. You are correct on that part. But I just wanted to point that out to you because I think it's important as far as your practice moving forward to make sure you're aware that that is a requirement. And then also, you know, with the statements around licensure, and I know our ethics code does say that we comply with laws, the 7-year record retention is not a law for supervision records. That is a law that is mirrored to like the HIPAA patient records and our IRS tax form laws, but they aren't, there's no law out there specific on a national level for retention of records. But there is state to state specific laws. And I think a couple of the challenges is to your point, there are some states such as Texas that all you have to do is prove that you're a BCBA and you can seek licensure. However, Arizona, Kentucky, Massachusetts, I mean, there's several other states that still require all of these first person verification forms and all these documentations. And one of the things that I talked with our board about early on, many years ago, before we had behavior analysts even on the board, was that discrepancy between the BACB saying 7 years and the states being sometimes no time frame. So in Arizona, there is no time frame for how long you should keep those records. And one of the things that that was advised of me at the time, again, separate of my role here, was when it comes to something like supervision, you should keep those records inevitably. Like there shouldn't be a time frame because each state's going to have different rules. Again, as a supervisor out of state, if you're never intending to practice anywhere else, it probably, you know, is safe to assume the requirements of the BACB. But if you are somebody like a practicing BCBA that may relocate, or in the event that Florida does get a licensure for behavior analysts, these sorts of things can come back up. And sometimes what happens is it's not even the law specific to that license, but other laws within the state that then kind of pick up on all of that. So I just wanted to provide you a little bit of information on that so that as you are practicing and as you are going through and looking at your supervision practices, that perhaps you may want to look at some of the way that different states do it, but most importantly, looking at the BACB requirements, because the supervisor retention for 7 years is a requirement in there.
Okay, that's noted. Thank you.
And then Ms. Manning, just one other thing, and I believe I said it last time, is that there are under the BACB Code of Ethics that we have 1.15, right, responding to requests. And I get it that the timelines get, you know, muddy on who's responding to who, what, when, and where. And appreciate you early on sending us that information and then it kind of trailing off as we were trying to put a, you know, trying to put an end to this. And so just attending to that as well, that it's, you know, when those requests come, it could, you know, whether it's from us in Arizona, from another supervisee you had in a different state in Wisconsin that has licensure and some other in Nevada that has licensure, that if these boards reach out to you and request information, that you're compelled under the ethics code to comply with the deadlines of those relevant stakeholders that may reach out to you or entities. And licensure boards are directly called out in that particular code. And so some of the reaction I think that you receive from me is that these are things that are now codified by the BACB, that licensure boards are to be, and in this case, I'll say respected when they make a request. We're not doing it to try to take away from your personal time or your business time or your downtime. That's not our purview. That's not what we're interested in. And what you have is kind of a reaction to the amount of time we're spending on this case. If you stick around to hear the docket of applications we're about ready to approve, we're going to go through 10 to 15 and approve them all in about 20 minutes. This case has taken us hours and hours now. And so I think that I appreciate you coming today. I'm sorry I came to a subpoena to get you here. I think we have the information that I feel comfortable with you attesting verbally to the supervision being complete and some wiggle room in our rules. But I would respectfully ask that in the future, if you're contacted by the board for information, that you work hard to be able to communicate back and forth with them, whether it's this board or another board.
I absolutely will, if the board responds in a timely manner. Thank you.
I think it's that kind of discussion that doesn't help move this process forward for you as a professional. The boards have their own contingencies as well, managing thousands of licensees, reports back to the state, just like you have your job description for the company you run and being a mom. And so communication sometimes drops off for various reasons. I think that as you receive communication, it is important to respond, regardless of how quickly others respond to you.
Understood. Have a good day.
Dr. Davia, you're muted.
I have no further questions from Ms. Mannion around this. I do believe that the information we have in the rule will allow us to move this to the full board for approval. Any of my colleagues have any comments about that? All right, hearing none, I guess we can move on to the next application.
Is there a recommendation with respect to Ms. Patterson?
Oh, I thought I made the recommendation that we move her to the full board for consideration for licensure.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, just a moment. All right, next agenda or next application is Kyuan Tran Tu Nguyen. Dr. Rates, you are the lead on that.
Yes, thank you. So I'll just do a quick reminder for the committee. This application came before us and we requested some additional information. The supervision that was originally submitted had two supervisors where there were some questions around the supervision and if that could count towards their 1500 hours. So the first was for an individual, Ms. Allegra, who was providing all supervision via telehealth from Colorado. And then additionally, there was supervision provided by Joseph Kamen, who for a period of time during that supervision was not licensed yet by the board. We did receive a response from the applicant indicating that there was some dual supervision during the 11-2020 to 5-21 time period from Heather Gonzalez. So there was supervision provided and she wasn't a licensed behavior analyst. If you look at the hours that would need to be removed from those two individuals, it totaled 190 hours, 0.83. The applicant did provide some additional supervision, both from an Ashley Adams and a Kelsey Erdman. Ashley Adams for 70 hours and 121.33 from Ashley. And looking at those individuals, they do meet the requirements, which would bring the applicant to the required 1500 hours. So I think in terms of the application and my review of that application with those additional hours that were submitted, this applicant would meet the requirements to move forward. In terms of, in particular, the individual from Colorado who was providing supervision, I think we would need to have a discussion as a committee And that may need to be, Mr. Chair, another agenda item. I'm not sure, so I'll leave that to you. But I think there's probably further discussion to be had there. But in terms of this applicant, what has been submitted does seem to meet the requirements. It covers that 190 hours that would need to be removed as it relates to those two supervisors.
So, Dr. Reyes, just for clarification, you're proposing that we move this forward to the board, right?
Yes, thank you for that. Okay, that would be my recommendation.
Checking that off, Ms. Packham, Ms. Galvin, do we need an agenda item, or this, what Dr. Reitz was talking about, the individual from Colorado, is relevant to this application, and so are we okay having that discussion at this time, procedurally?
I believe that a discussion about that individual stemming from this application would be appropriate without a separate agenda item.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Dr. Reyes, did you want to discuss, lead that discussion at this time, then we can discuss as a committee?
Yeah, I would be happy to. I think really what we have is somebody from another state who is not licensed providing oversight to a group of clients who are here in Arizona. And so really that would be practicing without a license for that period of time. And I think that that is something we need to discuss. We've certainly talked about that before for others. It was all provided by via telehealth. And so what we would need to do or communicate to that individual to make sure they're aware of the licensure laws here in our state.
Other comments from committee members? Okay. And then in the past, board staff, if you could help with my memory here, what has been the action of this committee? Or I suppose it goes to a proposal to the board. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, what I'm remembering is that what the committee has done in previous similar instances and in congruent instances, you have first invited the individual to appear before the CBA to provide additional context or explanation or information. And you relied upon that engagement with that person to determine whether to forward a recommendation to the board. Ms. Galvin, is that what you're remembering as well?
I do.
Okay, great.
So in that case, then committee members' thoughts on that?
I mean, just in agreement with Dr. Reitz, I mean, there's not much to be said other than we've got to go forward with opening that complaint.
Okay, so let's, would board staff make a note that we would reach out and invite this person to an upcoming committee meeting to have that discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, your next meeting is April 1st. I'm not sure if that can be arranged, but we will contact this supervisor and make the necessary arrangements for one of your future meetings.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I think I see the applicant on the line, so I don't know if they have anything that they would like to add.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Nguyen, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing last name. Do you have any comments to make or would like to make any comments?
Hi, I have a question that because I got the I got a supervisor from my company. And when I come to the company to clarify if that supervisor had a license in Arizona or not, I didn't get a question. I mean, I didn't get an answer from my company. So that led to the misunderstanding, and then I submitted ours. So moving forward, do I have to clarify from the company, or I have to figure it out myself?
In board staff, you can please correct me if I'm wrong. No, at this point, your application is being moved forward to the board for approval, and at this current time until approval, there's no further action required on your part.
Mr. Chair, if I just have a thought, if I can offer it, I think it may need to be said that, you know, once someone applies for a license and should they be granted that license, only that person is responsible to comply with the Arizona statutes and rules as it relates to the practice under that license. And what board staff has been experiencing is an unfortunate trend of applicants and licensees being provided information by their employer or by others who, and that information is incorrect. And so I think that any applicant, any licensee in this state should be aware of their own responsibilities. And if they're supplied poor information, incorrect information from another source, that could be highly problematic. So I hope you don't mind me making this this type of a statement in this context.
Thank you.
Thank you for your clarity.
Okay, anything further on that application? Okay, all right, thank you. Next application is Celeste Mathy. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead on that.
Yes, thank you. So, Ms. Mathy, I'm going to pull up my handy dandy notes. Ms. Mathy was sent a fair letter regarding just about 12 and a half hours that were completed by a supervisor who had not completed the BACB supervision modules. We did provide the letter requesting that she supplement those hours with appropriate experience hours. She spent the month of January doing just that, and she has provided us documentation of that. I reviewed her application, and at this point, I do recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. All right, next application is Tiffany Sepla. I'm the lead on that one. I also want to disclose that I was Ms. Sepla's instructor while she was attending her master's program. Yeah, so,
Mr. Chair, I have the same disclosure. I did teach one class a couple of years ago in which Ms. Sepla was in attendance, but I do feel that I can be objective in moving forward with the review of her application.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Ms. Sepla was issued a first additional information request with requesting a written explanation of supervised hours from Mr. Schubert and documentation showing days, numbers of hours supervised by Mr. Schubert, and a corrected multiple supervisors form was submitted by Ms. Sepla as requested to clarify those hours. Based on the documentation that she submitted, she meets the requirements of those hours. And at this point, I'd recommend her application to the board for approval. Any comments from fellow committee members? Okay. I noted Ms. Sepla's on the line. Do you have any further comments?
Nope, just thank you.
Okay, thank you for attending. Appreciate it. Okay, next application is Samantha Douglas. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Yes, Ms. Douglas comes forward seeking application or seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, became a board certified behavior analyst in late January of 2021. She also holds a license in the state of Texas, and she completed her study of applied behavior analysis and special education at Ball State University. She has listed four different activities under her list of supervisor experiences. She has checked one for the individual that provided supervision through Virginia. The individual has provided both the signed documentation for over 1,500 hours, as well as information around her supervision training, as well as an active license from the Department of Health Professions for the state of Virginia. This application complies with all rules and regulations, and I would be happy to see this one move forward.
All right, thanks, Dr. Davey. Next application is Shannon Palmer. Dr. Rates, you are the lead on that. And I also note that there is an individual on the call named Shannon, or is listed as Shannon. Shannon, are you Ms. Palmer, the applicant?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we'll just hold and request a comment after the review. If you could just hold tight. Dr. Rates?
Yes. So Ms. Palmer received her BCBA in February of 2022. She completed a master's degree at U of A between August of 2019 and August of 21. Supervision occurred between October 19th to June 21st, all happening at CARD under the supervisor, Brianne. This was for a total of 1,653 hours. In review of the application, I did not note any concerns and would recommend it move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Rates. Ms. Palmer, do you have any comments to make? Or?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, let's see. Next application is Dylan Nickel. Ms. Den, you're the lead on that. I do need to disclose that I was Mr. Nichols, one of his instructors, and I also worked and consulted an agency in which he was employed, but I feel that I can review this application without bias. So.
Mr. Chair, I am recused from this application.
All right, thank you, Dr. Rates.
And Mr. Chair, I have the same disclosure as earlier. I was an instructor a few years ago for Mr. Nickel, and I do believe that I can move forward with review of his application.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Den.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm ready. Mr. Nickel passed his exam in July of 2021 to become a board-certified behavior analyst. He graduated with a Master's of Science in ABA from Arizona State University. In May of 2021, he received his supervision in September of 2019 all the way through March of 2021 in the state of Arizona. He received 311.5 hours from SARC between September of 2019 to September of 2020. He received 635 hours from January 20th to August 20th in Bloom. He received 635.26 hours from September of 2020 to March of 2021 from the Bisto Center. Mr. Nickel is also now a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Kansas. He holds over 1,500 hours of supervision from multiple supervisors across these three agencies previously listed. At this point, he appears to have a complete application. I did not note any concerns and would move that this goes forward to the full board for review.
Thank you, Ms. Denton. All right, next application is Ryan Gleason. I'm the lead on that. Mr. Gleason was certified as a BCBA in June of 2021. He graduated in May of 2020 from Florida Institute of Technology with a Master's of Arts in Professional Behavior Analysis. He received 1,504 change hours of supervision under multiple AZ LBAs. I did not note any concerns with this application and would recommend it before the board for approval. Okay, next application is Brianna Rosales. Ms. Ben, you're the lead on that. And as note, Ms. Rosales is on the line as well. Oh, Ms. Denny, you are muted. Sorry.
Thanks.
All right, I'll start over. Ms. Rosales passed her board certified behavior analyst exam on February 2nd of 2022. I don't know if she chose this date intentionally because of all of the twos, but I did get a chuckle out of all of the twos and the date. Okay. She graduated from Capella University in September of 2021. With a master's of science and psychology. She received her supervision all in the state of Arizona from April of 2020 to September of 2021, totaling 1,945.1 hours of supervision by licensed behavior analysts. At this point in time, I do not have any concerns about Ms. Rosales's application and the content contained therein. I recommend that it moves forward to the board for review and approval.
Thank you, Ms. Denton. Ms. Rosales, do you have any comments to make?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Thanks for coming. All right, next application is Elizabeth Bennett. Dr. Rates, you are the lead on that.
Yes. So Ms. Bennett received her BCBA in September of 2020. She also indicated that she is licensed in the state of Texas. She completed a master's degree at the University of Cincinnati in behavior analysis between December of 2018 and December of 2019. She completed supervision in both Utah and New Mexico for a total of 1,614 hours. The supervisors did meet the requirements for supervision. So I did not note any issues with the application and would recommend that it move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Rates. Next application is Priti Lather. I want to note that I was one of Ms. Lather's instructors while she was working on her master's program. I'm assuming that somebody else might have something to say about that too.
I do, but I'm also the lead on the application, so I was going to let you finish.
I will need to recuse myself. I work closely with the applicant, so I will recuse myself from this.
All right. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I do not need to recuse myself, but I did begin a supervision practicum with Ms. Lather. I feel that given the brief nature of our interactions, I can move forward without any objective, any bias.
Thank you, Ms. Ben.
Excellent. Thank you. I also was an instructor for Ms. Lather early on in her program for a single course, so I do feel that I can move forward without any bias in the application. Ms. Lather did pass her exam in December of 2021. She graduated from ASU's in-person master's degree program through the psychology department. She completed, and that was in May of 2021. She completed 1,500 hours under the supervision of two licensed behavior analysts. And I have reviewed her application and I have no concerns with the application, would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. David Wilson. Okay, next application is Elizabeth Hendricks. Ms. Dent, you're the lead on that. And as of note, Ms. Hendricks is on the line.
Ms. Hendricks passed her board certified behavior analyst exam in February of 2020. Ooh, I think I did this. These numbers don't calculate. Let me go back to the document for just a second to get the correct date of passing the exam. I believe I listed the wrong year. So
Ms. Den, what is the date you have recorded for passing the BACB exam?
It was incorrect on her graduation date. So there we go.
Oh, okay.
Got it figured out. Those just didn't align on my end. So here we go. I'm ready to go again. She passed her exam in February of 2020. She graduated in May of 2019 from Capella University with a Master's of Science in Psychology. Her supervision dates were from September of 2018 until December of 2019. This supervision occurred in the state of California, where licensure is not required. She received 406.25 hours from Haynes Family of Programs. Those BCBAs, again, did not require licensure unless the supervision occurred in California. She also received 1,116.75 hours of supervision from CAR, totaling over 1,500 hours required for licensure. At this point, other than my fumbling through the dates, I don't have any concerns with the application.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Ms. Hendricks, do you have any comments to make?
No comments, but thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
As a result, I'll recommend that it moves forward to the full board.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Dunn. All right. Let's see here. Next application is Natalie Slicker. Dr. Rates, you are the lead on that.
So this applicant completed their BCBA certification in January of 2022. They completed a master's in special education between August of 19 and May of 21 through Ball State University. All supervision was completed here in Phoenix at Devereux under multiple supervisors for a total of 1,522 hours, 0.97, I will not leave that out. And that supervision happened between August of 19 and September of 21. In review of the supervisors, they all met requirements of supervision. There was a note that one supervisor no longer is active, but they were at the time of that supervision. So in review of this application, I did not see any concerns and would recommend that it be moved forward.
All right, thank you. Let's see, next application is Jessica Christie. I am the lead on that. Ms. Christie received her BCBA certificate in May of 2019. She graduated in June of 2018 from Brock University with a Master of Applied Disability Studies. She received 1,514.33 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in Ontario, Canada. I did not know any concerns with this application and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. I also note that Ms. Christie is on the line. Do you have any comments to make?
No, thank you all for your time today.
All right. Thanks for coming. All right, next application is Morgan Campbell-Hyde. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on that.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. Ms. Hyde is seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She has been a board-certified behavior analyst since August of 2018. She studied at Capella University Psychology with a specialization in applied behavior analysis. She completed the top part of her supervision form, indicating that her supervision occurred in California. All behavior analysts that were involved in her supervised activity were in California. California has no licensure, so we are clear on that matter. The applicant also provided us not only experience verification forms, but also the State of Arizona Board of Examiners supervised work experience forms. While the BACB forms are completed, as an administrative matter, documents such as page 11 on PDF, again, this is probably duplicative of the final experience form, but the dates are not filled out by the top part of this application, and I've noted that 3C is not responded to. again, board staff understanding that that's more administrative than actually verified above in the verification form, at least with regard to the dates of service. I'm not sure how you feel if you want to go out and get that information to be able to update the application since this was submitted or not, but I wanted to call that to your attention and let you all decide how you'd like to move forward. It's page 11 of the PDF. It just has some blanks. At first I thought I wasn't seeing it because the font was so small, but I zoomed in and but those, like, for example, the top part, the dates are listed on the verification form as a start date of 12/3/16 and 1/12/18. So I would assume those would be the dates that would go down there. It can't speak to 3C. But one would assume with the verification form that that was appropriate. But since this is part of the public record, didn't know if you wanted to get those updated. If you, I'm willing to move this forward with regard to it being completed with the information, but again, administratively, do you want to get it completed?
Yes, I will do that, Dr. Davey.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Ballas.
Okay, let's see. Next application is Agna Jaskavicius. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on that.
Thank you once again. Yes. So how did you say that last name, Dr. Stenhoff? Because I was sitting here phonetically writing it out, and I noted that she was...
I went with Jaskavicius, but...
Okay, I'm going to say what Dr. Stenhoff said. I noted that she's originally from Lithuania, and happy to have her coming into our side of the East Valley into Gilbert, Arizona. So she comes forward with a completed application. She became a BCBA in October of 2021. She studied at Ball State University, and there she studied education and got a master's in applied behavior analysis. She received her supervision from two different groups, three different supervisors in the state of Illinois. Illinois does not have licensure. These individuals were board certified behavior analysts, as well as having their BACB supervision training completed at the time of said supervision. And so I will make the motion to move this one forward to the full board for approval.
Dr. Davey, like the last one, this is just more of a clerical thing, but on page 9, this is the multiple supervisors at one organization form, the PDF. The state is listed as Arizona, but I believe that should be Illinois. But that's, yeah. Sorry, just to note that.
I don't know if that's where she's moving, if that is in Illinois and then also has sites here in Arizona.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
But I think, because I saw that, but then I thought I read something where that was most likely a typo.
Okay.
But I mean, we can definitely double have board staff just reach out and have clarification on that. Again, public record, and so we want to make sure it's accurate. Okay. Where did I decide when I was looking at that it was? Yeah, I think that we could just reach out and verify that, because both the groups that she's currently working with, the Cultivate is listed as Chicago on her supervision form, and then the pediatric therapy group is also listed as Chicago.
Okay.
So verify that is all that occurred in Chicago, then that would be acceptable, because if some of that happened here, then we may have some questions about individuals' licensure status.
Thank you, Dr. Davey.
So Ms. Backman, do you mean to clarify that we just double check that those actually occurred in the state of Illinois and that nothing occurred here in Arizona?
Yes, Dr. Davey, we had a similar instance, I think, last month. So we would just follow up in the same fashion.
Okay. And if it does, if it's in Arizona, then please move it forward. That'd be my recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Next application is, Aaron Chilcott. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead on that.
Yes, Ms. Chilcott is applying for application by universal recognition. She's currently a behavior analyst in Virginia and has been licensed in good standing since September of 2020. Ms. Chilcott did provide proof of residency in Arizona in the form of her driver's license. And all other requirements for universal recognition have been met. I do recommend that this be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you. And then I did note there is a person present with the first name Aaron. Is Aaron, are you the applicant that we just reviewed?
Yes, it's me. I'd like to thank you for your time and consideration.
All right. All right. Thanks for coming to the meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. Next and final applicant is Mandana Raushamidian. And Ms. Denton, you are the lead on that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This applicant is coming forward for licensure via universal recognition. They passed their board exam in February of 2018. They received a master's and a graduate certificate, both from accredited universities. This person holds their active license since April of 2018 in Virginia. Their license in Virginia is in good standing with no notable corrective actions placed on it. The Arizona license, driver's license, is provided as established residency in the state of Arizona. At this time, it appears that all of the requirements of the universal recognition have been met, and we would move that it goes forward to the board.
All right, great. Thank you. All right, so do we have a motion to move the applications forward as noted?
So moved.
I will second.
Any discussion?
Chairman, I was recused from a few, so I believe that means I can't participate. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you, Dr. Rates. All right. Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. All right, next agenda item, Dr. Davey, information regarding telehealth advisory committee.
The committee continues to forge ahead. The legislature did accept our recommendations for particular codes that are telephonic only, and that is that really does not impact behavior analysts, but it may impact some of the individuals that we work with in multidisciplinary teams, such as psychiatrists, OTs, and PTs. I think I relate to either this committee or the full board that the issue around our current AMA CPT code set is the term face-to-face, which appears in every single one of our codes. For CMS, that is a red line or a hard line in the sand that face-to-face cannot be audio only. The committee has decided that there are several, not just ones that impact us, but there are other services and codes that have that same terminology in it. And the state of Arizona will be writing a letter to CMS asking that hard line around face-to-face be either removed and work with AMA and CPT, or that the rule be adjusted within CMS. We move forward now to looking at things that are more going to be via telehealth platforms where we have both video and audio. The ABA codes as they stand today for adaptive behavior, those will be included in that set for continued recognition for telehealth in the state of Arizona under plans that are regulated under access. We were asked to, as the committee, for our respective fields, provide national guidelines around telehealth practices related to our field. I submitted the CASP guidelines on telehealth, of which I was one of the editors for, to be our guiding document here in the state of Arizona. It will go through a evaluation Q&A system for a matrix that we are creating right now with the University of Arizona to be able to ensure that not only our guidelines that we're putting forward, but other professions that are putting guidelines forward based on telehealth hit critical criteria as identified by the telehealth medicine collaborative out of U of A. So that's where we stand. Next meeting, I believe, is later this month, so I will not have an update until our next board meeting.
All
I may have an update at the next board meeting. I forget the exact timing. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Davey. All right. Next next item, referring to updates from the BACB. Ms. Pakanon?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just the one update from the BACB, which is really the invitation for regulators to consider participating in the annual convention of the Association of Professional Behavior Analysts, which Jennifer Michelson and I will be attending. We'll attend the regulator meeting on Thursday, and we will be in Dr. Davis Wilson's cheering section for her panel the following morning, Friday. So our attendance there is really focused, you know, just to those two events. I don't know this, but I suspect that the people who will be there, at least in, for a portion of the meeting, wearing their regulator's hat, will mostly be members of this profession. I'm really curious to see if we will be among other attendees who are staff to regulatory boards. But as I've mentioned in the past, one of the ideas that I would love to promote while I'm there is that there be more dedicated regulator content at this meeting going forward, because there are so few opportunities and spaces for these kinds of conversations to happen. So I'd really like to foster that development and contribute where I might be allowed to. Are there any questions of me?
No, I would just say that, I mean, I saw that Diane's on the panel with you, is that, you know, probably you will not probably be able to appeal Ms. Gina Green away from her responsibilities at the conference, but she will be a good one to connect with post-conference about your desire to be involved in helping move some content forward. Also the incoming president and outgoing president Allison and Charna, respectively, they'll also be individuals to connect with post convention, and either Dr. Davis and I can help facilitate that, or both of us, because I believe everybody on this committee feels the same way you do, that we need to get that information out, to share it. You know, I think some of the discussion we had earlier in this meeting really helps us to understand that while we understand what is going on in Arizona, statutes and rules, it doesn't necessarily mean that the larger community of behavior analysts understands the obligations of said committees and said licensing boards. So I think it is important, and would be happy to make those introductions for you after the conference.
Thank you very much, and I won't hesitate to drop your name in the process, so thanks.
Mr. Chair, I'll just add, you know, for my panel discussion, it was something that was scheduled pre-COVID a while ago, and it, you know, is just finding its way back on the agenda. But one of the areas that I will be specifically covering is considerations to cross-jurisdictional supervision. So hopefully by getting some conversations, not Arizona and Arizona board specific, but just in general, the difference between licensure and certification when it comes to supervision. Hopefully that will start some good conversations to limit the number of individuals that we have coming through with practice and title violation issues.
Thank you. Okay, so next item is discussion related to authorized continuing education. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I invite Dr. Raitz also to chime in to augment my update. So this committee and the board have dealt with the assessment exercise that we conducted with respect to, is the board, is this agency, are we assured that we can apply for to be an ACE provider and comply with the requirements? And we've established that we have confidence that we can. So the next phase of this effort was for the person tapped to be the coordinator, Dr. Raitz, for her and I to get together to ascertain, do we feel as though we can comply with the requirements and the process for the responsibility that that specific person carries. And so the outcome of that discussion, and really we where we landed with this was that in simple terms, the ACE coordinator is going to be largely responsible for monitoring the content of our learning activities, which is the CBA meeting, and then board staff will take on all of the documentation responsibilities. So it's really going to be shared, even though the ACE coordinator gets all the fame and the glory, but such as it is. So the next, and I think the final step of this process is really for Dr. Rates as the coordinator to do an evaluation of this meeting using the checklist that's provided, which is, I think, a very helpful tool. And if she is confident that from a content perspective that we can confidently file our application, then we will submit that application. So we really just need to do an appraisal or an evaluation against the checklist, and then we can hopefully submit and wait for the outcome.
Thank you, Ms. Pagan. And I'm going to lead into the next, and you're up again regarding the administrative rules and that regulate practice of behavior analysis.
Yes, I actually have breaking news on this front. You're the first to hear it. So anytime a state agency it wants to move forward with a rule package, a rulemaking promulgation, we must submit that material to the governor's office, and in the process, justify the rule changes against a specific set of criteria. For instance, is this rule necessary in order to comply with a statutory mandate, a new statute? Or does this rule clarify language? Does it reduce a regulatory burden? There's a prescribed set of criteria. So I completed that exercise and submitted it to the governor's office, anticipating a potentially lengthy wait for that review. But actually, we just got the notification 30 minutes ago that we can move forward. So with that approval, then we go to the next step, which is filing with the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. And I also think it's important, since we have leadership from AZABA here today, to mention that one important step in this process, one necessary step in this process, is to have a public hearing on the proposed rules. So we can invite the public to come and give, submit written comment or supply oral comments to the proposed changes. Of course, they can also do that in writing without attending a public hearing, but a public hearing will be scheduled. And I would like to check with Ms. Galvin, because the last time this agency held a public hearing for a rulemaking, it was pre-COVID. So of course, you know, we set up a meeting room, you know, where we invited the public, noticed the public, and so forth. Can we comply with that hearing requirement virtually, or must we do must we provide a location for the public to come to for that event?
No, and I can look into that further for you, but I believe the virtual meeting will be sufficient.
Okay. And maybe now I can ask the committee, and of course I'll ask the board as well, does the committee have a preference for us for how we want to host that public hearing? Do you want us to set aside an hour on a specific day to do that, or would it be appropriate to do it virtually, and maybe in doing so it's more convenient to stakeholders to attend and give their input?
It's mixed, but if we were to run at the same time as one of our regularly scheduled committee meetings, I would propose we operate that piece, the front end versus the tail end of it, just to ensure full participation and actually full attendance, if so that people can go to their respective work if needed. But that'd be my suggestion if we tried to overlap it. And Ms. Packon, do you believe it's only going to take about an hour for that discussion, you think? Or
so I think what has historically been done by any agency, any rulemaking agency, is to set aside an hour. That seems like reasonable. I will tell you that there are many public hearings on rulemaking that no one attends, but staff still stays in the room, and just in case, you know, someone decides to show up in the last 5 minutes of the meeting to offer their comments. So, you know, we try to be as accommodating as we can. In my mind, setting aside an hour is appropriate. We do tend to have ARC meetings before, application review committee meetings before, CBA meetings. But that being said, there's still, I see a window of an hour where we could comfortably do the public hearing, host the public hearing, probably virtually. And then when 9:30 happens, then it's a CBA meeting.
Yeah. I like that.
There is a prescribed window of time where the hearing needs to occur. So that might be the only thing that would thwart this plan that we are talking about. I don't do this frequently enough to remember what the time frame is, but there's a period of time where we need to conduct that hearing, and it can't be before and it can't be after. So I'll need to take a look at that and see if a CBA meeting happens within that window of time. So I'll get more clarity on that, and I'll have a better answer for you next month.
All right, great, thank you. And then sticking with you, legislation updates.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I just have a couple of these bills that I want to speak to. Most of them have effectively died by virtue of the fact that they either weren't assigned to a committee or the committee that to which it was assigned never held a hearing. So more than half of these aren't going anywhere unless they pop up on a striker bill at some point in the future, which is something that, you know, needs to be monitored. With respect to Senate Bill 1568, so this is a bill that did receive a hearing in the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, but what the hearing reflected was that there are still some issues to be worked out. So it's been retained, and there are, I think, some ongoing efforts to introduce more amendments to this bill to try to allay some of the concerns that the regulatory boards have. But the boards, the last version or the last iteration of a possible amendment that we saw, many of us are still of the opinion that this bill creates an extra burden, an additional burden on us, and it does not allocate adequate resources to address that burden. So it's really in a holding pattern right now. One of the key concerns for regulatory boards has been stripped out, which was the requirement that if a board orders a person to undergo a fitness for duty or a substance abuse evaluation, the board pays for that. Historically, that cost is borne by the licensee or the applicant. And so that provision is no longer in the bill. It was amended out by the committee. So we're waiting to see if there's going to be any change with respect to the strict timeframe that this bill prescribes on boards to complete investigations. 180 days is the last timeframe that has been floated. And many boards are indicating we could not do all of our investigations within 180 days. There are just certain investigations that simply can't be wrapped up in that period of time. So those are the issues that are still in some discussions. I don't know what's going to happen at this point. Looking for another amendment, looking for it to be scheduled for a full Senate review, and that hasn't happened yet. So the other bill that I wanted to talk about was one that we had some discussion around at the last meeting, and it is House Bill 20, six. Forgive me, 2612, occupational regulation. This is the bill that strips the language good moral character as a licensure requirement from all of the professions, but not psychology, because psychology doesn't have that language. So I did some research on that bill because I noticed that it actually passed the House on almost a unanimous vote. So what I discovered when I researched this was that this bill ties to a bill that passed last year, which we tracked and we had a little bit of discussion around. That bill was House Bill 2787 in the 2021 session. What that bill did, it's now enacted into statute, it modifies criteria for determining whether a person's criminal record disqualifies them from occupational licensure or certifications. This sort of movement has been called second chance legislation. So you have a criminal history, but you were reformed as a result of, you know, your sentence and your civil rights have been restored. You moved forward, you know, with learning a new a skill or acquiring a set of competencies, and you want to present to be licensed. So should that history be held against you? And the school of thought is evolving toward you should be afforded in some circumstances a second chance. So last year's bill had a provision in it that I missed, and I don't think anybody caught that, you know, in my peer group, that the 2022 legislature is charged with addressing this change throughout the Arizona revised statutes. And so the way that that is being implemented is by removing statutory reference to good moral character, integrity, moral and trustworthy, and so forth. So if those terms appear in the practice acts, this bill strips them out in order to conform with what last year's bill requires. That's a lengthy explanation. Did any of it make sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
Okay. So this is happening. And I think that what this committee is going to want to have Ms. Galvin weigh in on, and the board as well, does the removal of this language completely tie your hands as it relates to an applicant's past criminal history?
Yeah. I mean, so that's kind of our discussion. Like, we get an application where an individual has a misdemeanor when they were 16, 17, and they're now 25 and have not had any issues. Like, we typically look at that they've been, you know, they've recognized the error of their ways and they're moving forward. The question I think I would have is more of like the timelines. I believe it was this committee where we discussed a pattern of misdemeanors related to alcohol that was, you know, one every other year. And we ultimately had to make some decisions around that. So yeah, I think that would be my question as to what exactly does this language do to those kinds of discussions? Does it no longer mean, like, when they select that part of the application, is it just for them to inform us, or does it allow us to have that bearing or weight on our recommendation going forward? I think the psychology board would have the same sort of questions.
If this legislation becomes law, it's going to impact a number of state agencies, and that at that time, the Attorney General's office will provide written advice to all agencies impacted by this legislation and any other legislation. So that advice will come in time.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. And I think that we'd love to have the answers now, but in all likelihood, that will probably be something that won't be issued until August, September, maybe even October, by virtue of, you know, when the session ends and then the 90-day point at which enacted legislation becomes effective. So we won't have that clarity for some time, but I will continue to track the bill. What I'm unclear on, what I seem to remember from legislation that we were tracking last year was that we may be presented at some point in the future with a certificate from a court where the certificate essentially, the court has determined that this person has should be granted a second chance. Ms. Galvin, does that sound familiar? I don't think I'm making that up. I have some recollection of that, reading that.
That is my understanding as well.
Okay. So that is my only update. Does anyone have any questions about any of the material on the report?
Okay, so next agenda, discussion about the Thentia cloud, Ms. Packenham?
Yes, and I'm wondering if, would the committee maybe like a quick stretch break or comfort break while I bring up the site? I want to make sure that I have the right QA site and the login permissions so you don't have to watch me fumble if I don't.
Do we want to reconvene at 11:30? Would that work?
I don't even need that much time, but if, you know, whatever.
You want to say 25 then? Does 25 work? Okay, we'll reconvene at 25. All right.
Thank you. Launch into the demonstration, a couple of things. There's a new feature that I haven't seen yet or tested that I'm excited about, but together we'll be seeing it for the first time. It may still be buggy, so it may not work perfectly, but that's not something I'm terribly concerned about at this point. This page, it's really just a generic landing page or splash page. We don't need to use this page. We can just provide the URLs for all of these action items directly from our website. So we don't need to present this in this format. We can use it if we want, but what's important is just, you know, the portals into which our customers will use, will do certain things, whether it's searching for a licensee, renewing, filing a complaint, or in this case, we want to look at applying for licensure. And I am using a test account because this is obviously the test site. So let me log in. Try to, there we go. Wait. Well, this is going to be a problem if I can't log in. Okay. Users will have a security question that they will have set after their first time using the system. So this person, in this instance, this is a person who's already logged into the system and created a profile. So there is an additional layer of authentication, that our applicants will need to demonstrate. So this page enables the applicant to start a new application. It's the welcome page. There are some account settings for passwords and so forth. There won't be any fees and receipts at this point in time because there is no application. So I'll go ahead and get started. Along the left, as you're starting to see the page load, there are application sections that the applicant can move through, and they can do this in whatever order they would like. So if they have certain information available, but other information they're still waiting on or don't have the time to complete, they can save it and return and complete it. And what they've done, because this will be the same portal for psychologists and behavior analysts to through which they will apply, is they've sectioned it off so that the psychologist applications will all be presented here and our BA applicants will be here. So we will see application for licensure, the general, the fee waiver application, if they are income eligible to apply with the fee waived, and then also universal recognition. Universal recognition won't be that interesting to demo because it's so limited in terms of the requirements. So we'll go ahead and launch the behavior analyst application for licensure, the general app. And I think this page loads a little slow because it is a QA environment. So one of the things that we are really giddy about from the board staff perspective is that all of this content here, this is right now, this is placeholder content. We haven't actually reviewed it to determine if it's exactly the way we want it, but all of this content is under our control. So we don't have to submit a support ticket. We don't have to negotiate with other boards on a shared platform, you know, whether we can have our specific instructions there. So we can change this. It's very configurable, super easy. So we really appreciate that we have that much flexibility. We can also insert URLs from that content to other sources. We can send them to the BACB website. We can send them to find, you know, additional forms or resources on our website if they're not built into the system. So it looks like in this case, in this account, there's some information that's been pre-populated, which actually saves us some time. So this is the personal information section. So the applicant would fill all of that out. We do have requirements to provide information or to gather data and report that to the governor's office on military status. So it seems that we have a spouse serving in the Coast Guard who blows up things. So save and continue. I'm sometimes a little nervous about showing test sites because sometimes we get a little creative with the content that we enter. So educational background, this is where we would provide instruction here as to what we require in terms of the educational background. You know, we don't require your high school diploma. We don't need to see your technical certificate and, you know, something unrelated, but here is where we would tell the applicant, here is what we need you to provide with respect to your educational background. So it's really easy to, in this case, edit information that you provided previously, add other degrees, asterisks indicate required information. So pretty straightforward as we would expect it to be, I think. We can save and continue and just keep progressing through the application in this fashion. You might be curious about this requirement, language of care. This is actually something that's required of for us to collect for our psychologists as part of a workforce data effort that has been launched recently in Arizona. I'm not sure that we will retain this question for behavior analysts, but if it seems like it's, we've never asked that before, it could be because this was put here, but we can remove it, but ensure that it's active for psychologists since we, by Arizona statute, need to collect that information. We'll move on to the next section, which is, other license. So this is where the applicant might, fairly common for us to see the teaching certificate. So that would go here, or perhaps a license in another jurisdiction. We capture employment information in the next section. And that functions just like the add education, educational background section. So pretty straightforward. And then this is the section where the applicant would opt out of a public address if they do not have a practice address, if they have only one address. And the statute 3232.26 affords them the opportunity to omit that from the public directory because it's a private residential address. So we put that information here. And related to direct client patient care, that's also a requirement of the workforce data collection effort. So that question might go away in our application. Okay. I attempted to move forward, and because I didn't put anything in there, the system won't let me. So I'll just cancel and go back. The next section is something you'll certainly want to see because it relates to certification. And so this is where they would add their BACB certification information. Let's take a look at what fields this captures. Certification number, type, the organization, issue date, and supporting documentation. So this is where they would upload the screenshot of their certification from the BACB's registry. So I'll cancel that out so I can move forward. Supporting documents. There are a collection of documents that are required here. They all seem to be sort of unrelated to the other sections, so it kind of made sense for us to put them here. So the statement of citizenship, the photograph. There may be others that over time are requirements, and so we could easily add them to this section. Let's see if I can get out of this without having to do that. I'd like to jump to the supervised experience if it will let me. Nope, it's not going to let me. Okay, so I'll just upload some random files. So this is where they would fill out the information related to their supervised experience. So we present a series of questions. If there is a no question, say we answer no to this one and no to this one. We're supposed to get a text box, I think, with an explanation. I'm not seeing that. Interesting. I'll change it. Oh, there's the date of the exam. So if they say yes, they've taken the exam, it prompts them for the date of the exam. Let's see. So
can you go back to that field for just a second?
Yeah. Which one?
The entering the date of the exam.
Oh.
So on that, just as we get for like, it's kind of time elapses just as a general coding question. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to say what format you could type that in? So like, for example, if I had to put the date in my exam, I'd have to go back to 2000 something, right? And that would be a lot of like click, 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 clicks. Whereas if I could just type in 01, 17, 2000,
there a way to make
Yeah. Is there a way just to put the format that you would be able to just directly type it in there?
Yeah, instead of using the date picker.
Yeah, I think like on the coding side, they put like almost a faded one that says MMDD, you know, YYY. So you know how to, if it's a slash, if it's a dot, mm-hmm. or however, that way. Because in some forms that you fill out where you have to do historical things, it is kind of a, I don't particularly like that option. But if you knew how to type it in, that it wouldn't trigger a problem. So maybe the team could just put what format that date could be typed in somewhere.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion, because it can get frustrating if you don't know what the system is looking for. Mm-hmm. I don't generally like date pickers, especially the older that I get, and I have to scroll and scroll and scroll to prevent in my past, like my birth. Yes. So I like to enter in dates anyway. So, but that's good feedback. Okay, this is the one that I was looking for. Have you completed your 1500 hours? No. We designed this question to ask, well, why not? Or, you know, we need to understand why you answered no to that question. And I think what we're going to need to consider is, by virtue of me answering no to these questions, do we want to see the same system behavior? Do we want to see here that we need an explanation if you're answering no on these questions that we would expect the applicant to answer yes to? So what does the committee think?
Ms. Packard, will you repeat the question?
Yeah. So these are required questions. They are the same questions that came, you know, from the PDF application. So just in testing this, I'm answering no. And what I'm not seeing, and maybe we should see, is a text box prompting an explanation. So did your supervised experience include da 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 da? No?
Yeah.
So I think we need explanation boxes here, don't we?
Yeah,
I agree.
If you're going to get a no, because it's, if you select no and put this forward to us, we're going to ask you. So we might as well just trigger them to give us an explanation. We very rarely see no's. My other question is if one of those no's is missing, let's just say they didn't, like today didn't answer, did your experience, you know, include the implementation? If yes or no is not selected, it will not allow them to move forward, right?
Well, shoot, I should have tested that before because now I can't unselect something. Let's see what happens if I hit. Okay, there were some errors. Okay, please explain the deficiency in supervised hours.
Too tired.
I think I'll have to do another test of that, Dr. Davey, because I think that's a good question. We don't want them to move forward and not provide an answer. The asterisks suggest to me that it is required. Yeah. But I think the feedback that we need to give to the development team is that we need text boxes on all of these.
Yeah. If there's a no, or if there's one of those things where we're going to want, like where we would verbally request information, or you're going to get one of us contacting you saying, hey, we need more detail, like we might as well just call it out right there.
Right.
Now, what's cool, I think, about what you said is that they could save it, right? So all of a sudden they click no, and it's like, well, we need an explanation. Then click save, go back into their files, figure out, you know, what they're going to put in that box, and then come back in and start right back up. So that's good.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So we'll give that feedback, see if I can move forward. I'm still not seeing the new exciting feature that I have yet to test.
I was really hoping that there'd be a chat bot that looked like Dr. Stenhoff down in the corner, or perhaps.
It might reduce our applications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it'd be better than Clippy from Microsoft.
That's a really interesting idea, though. Do we want to subscribe to a service where we can provide live chat support from board staff to applicants? That might be a slippery slope. I'm going to pretend maybe I didn't even raise that.
It'd have to be an AI version of Dr. Stenhoff, where it asked a question that just pulled from a database. Have you read ARS 42136-573? Like, it would have to be like that level of...
Right.
Dr. Davey, we need more BCBAs, not less in the state.
I don't know. I think the chatbot might get a lot of traction.
I think an alternative avatar might be better. So,
oops, sorry. Perhaps the Beastie Boys robot from Intergalactic.
Actually, I almost want to put in a wrong date to see how it behaves. Total hours. Whoa, what is this? Oh, that's maybe interesting.
Maybe flip the start date and the end date and see if it triggers anything.
Great idea. Let's have some fun with this.
Let's break things. We never get to break things. And then it would also skip site name, since the asterisk we think is going to trigger a fail. Yeah.
Didn't catch this that I can tell though. Well, let's put these, just some garbage in here, and leave the dates flipped and see what happens. Oof, it took them.
So let's fix that.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Nothing like some good QA of a website.
Right. Okay, I'm hoping we see. No. Okay, so they must not have pushed it to QA after all. Well, we were supposed to see a dynamic table that looks very much like the multiple supervisors at one site form that we've implemented fairly recently. I got an email last night that it was, they thought they had it configured, but they must have pushed it in. What I may have to do is screencast another demonstration of this when it is ready. So we've reached the declaration questions. Have you ever done any of these things? And we've tested this quite a bit on the renewal application. So we do need to make sure that every question that we need to ask is represented here. And just make sure too that the way that you answer this question, it triggers the explanation box, it triggers the upload for, you know, maybe court records and so forth. So this hasn't been reviewed closely by staff to make sure all the content is present. I think what we've done is we've tested just to make sure that yes answers do prompt the applicant to do something. And we're really happy with this because all too often, you know, a paper application just simply, you know, we can tell them in multiple ways and in multiple places, we need additional information, but they can still submit an application to us and not supply that information, which prompts our follow-up. And that's what requires some time. So just this section alone is going to really make this process of exchanging information way more efficient. So in this case, I've been a very, very good person, so I don't have anything to declare. We can put whatever attestation language that we would like to here. This is pulled from we've had this on the application probably forever. And then we're probably at the payment screen. Yes. So I'm not going to go through the process of testing the payment, but that is pretty much how the application construct works. So disappointed I couldn't show you the dynamic table, but like I said, I can record me completing it, you know, a little brief video to send to you later, or, you know, potentially we may just put this on the next meeting agenda and show you what I hope to be by then the final product. Does anyone have any questions or feedback or comments? What do you, I mean, I was doing the driving, but based on what you were observing, what do you think of the system?
Can I just make one comment on the payment gateway? Do we have still reduced fees for veterans and things like that? Will this system be able to, is that a thing that I remember reading somewhere that we do have some reduction somewhere? Or is that a new thing introduced? I can't remember where I saw it.
Yeah, so the current fee, alternative fee, is the fee, it's waives the fee entirely if the applicant provides supporting documentation to show that their family income, individual family income, is at 200% of the federal poverty level or less. So they will be routed to an entirely different application process. And we're still sort of working those details out, because we would want to ascertain first, are they eligible based on, you know, my review of what they submitted, and then they move forward with that application. I think, Dr. David, what you're describing, I think there are some proposals maybe in the legislature for reduced fees for veterans and spouses of active people in active service.
So as someone who, their company does a lot of online active subscription fee management services, you know, having the ability to go in and make these changes is something you're probably going to want to talk to the back end people about. Like, if all of a sudden that legislation goes through, like, how do we, you know, do you select that you're a veteran and you're going to upload that information? Much like you said, is there going to be right after the attestations and before you get to the payment or at the top of this payment, apply for a hardship, and that's going to route you someplace else? And then any other like kind of prorating issues that may go on, or if, you know, if this is, so as you kind of just think through that, like there may be some dynamic pricing that they're going to have to figure out how they can get to for you. You know, not, I wouldn't say they're always going to be immediate, but they may need to go pretty quickly, like in a, like the health crisis, if we're going to, you know, waive fees for, you know, 3 months because of something, then getting that to zero in a timely fashion will be critical.
Yeah, no, that's really good input. There's so much of the system that is configurable by staff, and we are learning more and more of that every day. And, you know, sort of, I think Krishna Poe is probably our most intrepid system user right now. Jennifer is using the system. We joke about how she fixed something and the process broke something. And, you know, we're just learning this. All of this there, but there are some changes where we submit a service ticket, and so far the response has been really, really prompt. And what we're enjoying is that because we are the first Arizona agency to walk this path with this company, they are so eager to please, and they want to ensure that we have the best possible outcome so that we tell all the boards that follow us about that experience. So we are too big to fail. And what they're finding is that we're throwing a lot of challenges at them. And some of those challenges require, you know, some thought and some creative solutions. But in every instance so far, we feel pretty confident that they're going to meet our needs and our changing needs, our evolving needs. So, and those are important that you're raising.
Glad you guys have that. It's no fun if you have a system and you can't break it. So keep up the work.
Indeed. So there are, I can't demonstrate this for you, but there's a, applicants have the ability to, after their application is submitted, they can see the different statuses but they can also go into their application and see what content is missing. So if there is a, if they're wondering if their transcript arrived, they can be able to see, okay, yes, it's been posted to the system. So that will ameliorate so many questions that Kathy and Zakiya deal with on a daily basis. Did this arrive? Did my supervisor send this? What about, you know, I'm sure it's got to be there by now. They field so much of those questions every day that, you know, once the applicants get used to this very self-service kind of system, you know, they can tell their supervisor, they can tell their employer, hey, I'm really close, or hey, everything's in. And, you know, we won't be inundated with that kind of, those kinds of questions. And also what I won't be able to show you too, I have tested the feature where once the application is submitted, it does create a PDF of all the applicant entered content. The piece that they're still working on and they're very close to having is the feature that would also pull all those other documents and merge it into that PDF, so that what you'll see is still the same content that you see right now, which is, you know, application with a bunch of fields filled out and then followed by the documents that you need to see. So that it'll look a little different, but you'll still see those uploads, those transcripts, you know, those final verification forms. They'll all be merged into a single file that we will continue to push at you. You'll just have to get used to the formatting being a little bit different in the actual application field. So it's going to take a little bit of time just to sort of reorient to information being displayed a little differently than, you know, you're so used to our application sections in the sequence that they are. So we'll help you as much as we can to help you, you know, make that transition. So I'm sure I'll have more to show you later, but at a minimum, I wanted you to see what sort of progress has been made and see how close we are to getting away from paper and a much more efficient process, and hopefully fewer errors along the way.
Ms. Pekina, the format that we get, will this just generate a report similar to what we have now, except it's not a series of PDFs? Is that okay?
Yeah, it'll be a single merged PDF. So we've been insisting on this feature since day one, and they are testing it right now for an Oklahoma agency. So once they're happy with how it's functioning, then they will release it to ours. What we can't turn on applications intake with this system until we know there's a way to get the committee what everything that you need to see. So that's much of the holdup. We can collect information all day, every day, but until we can put it in a format that's that you can use, we just have to wait.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And I guess my question to that would be, you know, the way we get things today in terms of a PDF, is it also possible to even just get it out as almost like a spreadsheet, right? A dynamic spreadsheet where you've got the applicants listed down the y-axis and across the top on the x, all those different areas that are responded to. And so as they're assigned to any one of us, we essentially can just work across the spreadsheet and have a place for notes and have a place for, you know, green light. I can, like what I do in my own file system is I green light them, yellow light them, or red light them for a comment. So some sort of workflow would even be helpful, I think, Heidi, as you think about how this would be dumped into a dynamic spreadsheet. So like today, I did not have time to get to Ms. Malice prior to the call to point out some of those administrative pieces that were missing. Mm-hmm. I typically try to do that for her prior to the call or prior to our meeting, but I just didn't get around to that today. It'd be nice to flag that during our review process and just, you know, but you know, some of this is going to go away, obviously, but maybe in one of their written statements, they would say something that would require us to give some feedback to you or others that you could act upon almost in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a terrific idea. We haven't talked about anything that looks like that to my knowledge, but again, the developer is just so eager to establish this their product that they're so proud of and that is, you know, very customizable to all the users. So this may be something where I say, hey, you know, this our board feels like this would be a really useful tool to help them accomplish their work. What they do then is they put it on what they call the product roadmap. And so they talk about, you know, where in terms of the sequence of other things that they want this new feature to be placed. Then they flesh out the requirements, you know, test it and follow, you know, the agile development cycle that that they use. So in every case where we've said, do you do this or you know, is this a thing? They have said no, but let's put it on a roadmap. So they're just so amenable to those kinds of ideas.
Yeah, looking at the format of this, I would almost think, you know, if whatever they're using on the backside to create it, if it's similar to like a Google form or a Microsoft form, then the default is to create it as a table in terms of what comes out of it versus, you know, us asking them to generate it into kind of a page by page PDF. Mm-hmm. It might actually be something that is easier for them, but we'll see.
Right. Well, we're almost there. So I hope the next time we talk about this, we're close to or committed to the launch date. So, which will be a game changer for all of us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you is right. All of you guys for.
Yeah, this will be nice. So. And hopefully it's going to be, I'm sure it is going to be a time saver for the staff too. So.
Yes. We would like to be able to free up the resources that we have to be, you know, more proactive than we can be at this point with our applicants and with our licensees. So I'm eager to see us sort of shift our priorities to, you know, being more effective and proactive regulators than just trying to keep up with tasks.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. May I ask a question?
Yeah, Ms. Folks.
Thanks, Dr. Stenhoff. Dr. Davey, could you send a copy of that spreadsheet you were talking about that you use? It might help us show the developers what you're asking about or what you're asking for.
Oh, I don't have a spreadsheet like that. I was just saying I could imagine one being created like that. It would be more like that it's automatically created from the information that's put into the table. So like think about the Google form that the Ms. Poe uses for tracking hours from the larger board. If she has us fill out a Google form that on the backside, what she gets is a Google sheet that has my email address, my name, what I'm reporting for hours, whether or not to be paid or not. That's kind of what I was thinking is that if we're capturing that information on the website, that the backside of it could be an Excel spreadsheet of some sort.
Okay, so you're thinking about this in terms of just the applicant's questions or their question and answers on the application?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think across, you know, the y-axis would, you know, be each applicant, and then across the top, like in terms of an x, we would have, you know, starting with the first answer they give us, is it a yes or a no, is it a, you know, is it the date at which they did it, all of that information essentially would just be in a table across for us to quickly scan to the right, and then we could green light it, yellow light it, or red light it right there on the spot.
Okay, thank you, that helps me tremendously.
We can make a fake one if it's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, a mock-up would be really great. There's a module in the system that all committee members, board members will eventually have access to. Right now, we're only using it with Ms. Galvin for her to access files. And there are many more features than just simply us creating a meeting folder and saying, here's all the files. It's called the governance module. And so I envision that this would probably function within the governance module because that's where your permissions in the system are assigned to. So at some point we'll be telling you, okay, this is your new place to go to find your meeting materials, and we'll leave Google and it's the challenges that Google presents behind. So we're really excited for that change too.
Okay. Kathy, if you want to just mock up something that across, like, you know, column A, B, C, D is like just the first page, say, of the application, you know, and kind of look at it and see if that's what we're all thinking.
Okay, I think I get it, but, and I can definitely do that, no problem.
Or just fire me an email, I'm happy to.
Okay, sure.
The kind of task that Kathy loves to do. So sincerely, she does.
It's true.
All right. Any other comments on that item?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say, you know, one of the things that I think this is going to help with is the legitimacy, you know, back to the application seen earlier today, because it'll be formalized in the process online. I think it'll be nice for the supervisors and the applicants to see like the legitimacy of the process. So I'm very excited about it.
Okay, so to be continued.
All right. Okay, next agenda item. So items for future meetings. Does anybody have any items they'd like to add? Dr. Davey.
This kind of goes along with multiple things we've been talking about. One, was back in staff attending in New Orleans, and then just kind of some discussion points around the fact that, you know, Arizona was one of the first to have licensure. And then I was kind of thinking that it would behoove us to maybe start to capture a little bit of a timeline or a history of how we've gotten to where we are today. And I didn't know if you were going to get interns again this summer. And so I wanted to kind of throw this out there as perhaps a summer project that could look at, you know, from the moment essentially, or, you know, kind of hitting a couple of key points in time, like legislation is passed that that sets forth the need for licensure for behavior analysts. You know, it's tied to legislation that was mandating coverage for those affected by autism spectrum disorder under certain plans here in the state of Arizona. And then kind of before it gets so far out of, you know, my failing memory, like how we worked with the psychology board early on, the meetings we held with Dr. Davidson, Dr. Bohansky, multiple others, Dr. Wexler, just trying to capture some of the timeline that has led to the position we're in today. I think that it would be nice if we had some sort of a document timeline that really highlighted that. And I think, you know, I don't necessarily think it needs to be the complete history, but at least some key points that could be shared on the website or something that when any of us go and talk or ask questions, we could use it as a resource. Because I think that as we look across the country and we see licensure laws that come or that are that go away or that are not that great, or people that suggest that working under a psychology board is not possible, that we have set a model to work under a collaborative board. It took us time, but I think that time tells the story that this has been collaborative. And so it's just something, if we have an intern, that I would see some value in that for all of us and for future professionals that are regulated by this board.
Dr. Davey, Mr. Chair, if I may, there is similar work like this already captured with AZABA. And there is some movements to further capture it with the association as well. I wonder if to maybe, intern or not, I think if this is something, because so much of it is actually housed in the association as far as the advocacy work to get to this point. I wonder if the ask could be that we combine the work kind of as far as like to the point of, okay, committee development, and then seek the board and committee's feedback on that part, combine the efforts, leverage the association, and then have the association give permission for their, you know, that information to be shared. I mean, the intern idea is fine, but I think it's great, but there's already that information housed at the association.
Is it shared though out front? Is it like is it on the website, or is it displayed in a manner that's easily consumable?
It's not at this time. It was an effort that early on was done through CEU events. So there's several PowerPoint slides and things like that. There's been an ask by the association to one of the committees to memorialize it more formally for like the website. And so it's just a matter of taking those resources, turning it in, which one of the committees, which is one of the public policy committees on diversity, equity, and inclusion, their committee was tasked with kind of putting that together so that we can memorialize all of the history and then move forward with just adding to it through the years. But so everything's kind of housed in different spots. The current project this year is combining it all into one spot.
Yeah, I think somehow that the board should be involved in a little bit of oversight of that. Just, you know, the association's one thing, no problem with that. But the board will have like minute notes from, you know, someone like you, me, and Dan and others sitting in front of, you know, a very scary group of psychologists asking us point blank questions about our ethics code. And, you know, Gene was there for those. And so there might just be some additional records that the board has that might help in that discussion. But somehow I think we should capture it. So whether it's, I don't care how the mechanism goes, if it's collaboration with the association, great. If it's up on our, you know, kind of, I think about the video that was done last year about how to apply for licensure. It'd be nice to just have some of those things, at least the written part of it down, so we could do additional work with it later on and then continue to add to it. Like, I think it's a worthwhile project.
I agree with you. And I just brought it up, not for any reason other than manpower, because it's already being worked on in one place, but I would agree with the collaboration piece. And then I would tell you that the ask has been to create it into a video, because we have the written part, but the video might be more compelling. So what I think we could do is, you know, add this to an agenda item for a future topic, invite the association, and then perhaps, I would give it a little bit of time, just because, like I said, it's all documented by the association. It's just a matter of putting it together, but perhaps come up with a game plan on how that information could be shared for feedback from this committee and or board staff and the attorney before it's finalized.
Future board meeting item, and then we can discuss it. If
okay, other suggested items.
Mr. Chair, we have one that carries over from the board meeting itself, but I wanted to just bring it up because it's a component of this committee. But I did request that we have a conversation around that the supervisor form, specifically around who should be able to sign that form. And that was a request that we made at the board to kick back over to the committee. So it's something to have on a future agenda, and it is coming.
Thank you. Okay, other items. All right, next item, adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll second.
All right. Okay. Any discussion? All right. All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right.
I don't know, Don. Adjourn. It sounds like it was just you and I.
I know.
I guess we're ready to go. Everybody else going to stick around?
Ms. Denton's got hers on mute, so we can't hear an affirmative there. So,
All right. I'm not muted. I thought I said I.
There we go. All right.
Yesterday on Zoom, I was upside down. So
now we have a